I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest on them all, BFT. How are you doing tonight, man?
Man, I'm doing awesome. We're going to talk about the foosballs. We got to watch the Texans kind of sort of play last Thursday. So, woo!
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, did you know that the Texans without GM is a very stupid football organization? And they may possibly trade Jadeveon Clowney.
Here's my take on the Texas GM situation. If you're an NFL GM, not on the Texans, aren't you calling him up every day, going, "Hey guys, what do y'all want for Deshaun Watson? You know, he's not looking so good. You know, what do you guys want for this guy? What do you want for D-Hop? You know, come on, man, we can work something out. We can work out a trade." Wouldn't you just be so super manipulative? Because it's like right now the Texans are like the really bad fantasy baseball owner in your league who does these like conglomeration of crap trades. Like he'll trade like Mike Trout for three prospects kind of trades. And that's what I feel like the Texans are right now. So I would be on the phone every day just going, "Hey guys, you know what? Hey, look, we got a second round draft pick out here. You guys could really use some more draft picks next year. Hey, what do you think about, you know, Bernardrick McKinney?"
Yeah. I think that'd be the move, to try to trade for like Cunningham or McKinney or Reader or, I don't know, the part ways with Fuller. I'll even try to get one of the Jordan rookies, you know, or even Waring, because it doesn't seem like Bill O'Brien even likes him at all. But, yeah, I would be trying to poach some of these other players at all for it. But I guess kind of what happened was today's Wednesday. On Monday, there were a bunch of, you know, tweets from not like sources, but it's people who said they had sources, and they said they wouldn't be surprised if Clowney was traded today. These are people who are just like, you know, they write for the USA Today version of the Texans. A Battle Red blogger, I should say, or like a guy who I guess knows Jadeveon Clowney personally, and he said he's out of here. And I mean, he hasn't been traded yet. And then yesterday, John McClain said he would be surprised if he was traded. Michael Lombardi doubled down on that. And then it was also said that he nixed the trade to the Miami Dolphins as well, too. And so the Texans, I don't even know if they are. And then Bill O'Brien, they asked today if they're looking to trade him. And he said, "I know he's still here. We plan on him being here, and we're excited to have him back here," or whatever. So who knows? So BFT, do you think the Texans should do what the rumors have said they've been doing, and do you think they should trade Jadeveon Clowney?
I think Clowney is a perfect example of what not having a football person running your operations is doing to the team, because he should have been resigned. And for my money, this goes back to Brian Gaines should have taken care of this before he got walked out the door. This has been the worst offseason I think I've ever seen a pro football team have. It's lacking in any sort of cohesion, any sort of strategy, you know, not signing a guy like Clowney. Yes, he's going to be expensive, but look, and I get it. He doesn't put up the happy counting stats, and I get that. What I also get is that right now Romeo Crennel gives basically J.J. Watt license to line up against his best matchup. So you have Watt consistently going against right tackles and Clowney consistently going against left tackles. And guess which one's better? Watt's always picking up that matchup to give him the better advantage at Clowney's expense. So if you want to know why Clowney doesn't have great counting numbers, especially sacks, well, J.J. Watt's telling Clowney, "Go, hey, you take that double team. I'm going to go single up over here on the right tackle." So there is a reason Clowney doesn't have those pretty counting stats. But without Clowney, this defense is not good. It's not going to be good at all. And for me, if you're going to trade this guy, there's not enough value you can get via trade that's going to come back and help the team this year. There's not. You're going to have to get some sort of future thing. So you either write off 2019, which it seems like we're kind of doing anyway, or you don't trade them. And which one is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you brought a good point with the Clowney stats, because that's one of the things that I think are like super annoying, but it's like, well, he's hurt. He hasn't lived up to his potential. I mean, last year, you just look at the pass rushing numbers. Well, I had 16 sacks, Clowney had 9 sacks. And this would be a point, just like, well, Clowney's not, you know, an incredible pass rusher, but he's still a very good one. But even if you look at just what Juan Clowney did last year, Watt had 15 quarterback hits, Clowney had 11. Watt had 42 hurries, Clowney had 35. And there's not like a huge, you know, difference between the two. Really, like the biggest difference that you could say is, like you said, where Watt is picking up 3 sacks against Chad Wheeler against the New York Giants. While Jadeveon Clowney is working against Nate Solder on the other end. J.J. Watt's picking up 2 sacks against Brian Wells in Week 17 against Jacksonville. Where, you know, Clowney, I was really hoping he was going to get that 10 sack. The game didn't happen. Just to make the haters and losers mad. But, you know, like he does get the harder matchup, and he does do that bungee jumping through the middle of the line of scrimmage as a way to create pressure as well, too. But, I mean, like, Clowney's still a really good pass rusher. He's not a top 10 pass rusher like Watt is, but he's still a very good one. He's also – I think he's the best edge run defender in football. Just the things he does are just so grotesque and diabolical. And no other than the Texans to Troy Clowney, because he's also entering age 26 season. He's in the prime of his career. He's been healthy the last 3 seasons. I think he'll get even better as a pass rusher too. He just needs a secondary move after his first move gets stopped. And this team really needs him. Like if they don't have Clowney, this is probably going to be a defense that gives up, you know, 28 points every game, because they have to create pressure because their secondary is not very good, especially the cornerback position. And while Watt and Clowney aren't both being monsters week in, week out, games like, you know, the divisional round happened where – or the wild card round happened where the Colts scored 21 points really quick. Games like the Jets happened where – I mean, Watt had a great game that game. Like, Sam Darnold still scored 24 points against them. You know, like, those sorts of things tend to happen whenever you don't have them generating an insane amount of pressure like that. And you look at the schedule, too, and they're playing the Falcons, the Panthers, the Chiefs, the Patriots. They're probably the worst offense they're going to play this year is maybe the Raiders. And the Raiders still have Antonio Brown, Tyron Williams, and Derek Carr, and you know, who knows what happens over there. And so I think it'd be an absolute travesty, and it'd be a cataclysmic event for this team if they do trade Clowney for, like, a first-round pick.
Yeah, because there's no replacing that value. So if you trade Clowney, in my opinion, you're basically saying, okay, we're screwing 2019, we're moving on to 2020, because this team is not going to be competitive without them. We can't – there's nobody's going to step up. There's no Duke EG04 to come in as another guy. There's, like, outside of Whitney Mercilus, there's nobody on the roster who can get to the quarterback.
Yeah, no, for sure. And even Mercilus, I know they're talking about him, like, looking great right now in offseason that he was hurt last year. But he still is a guy who has to rush to the top 5. Hopefully, you know, Crennel uses him better this year. I still wouldn't be expecting, you know, Mercilus age 30 to have, you know, 8 sacks this year. It really just is dependent on how they use him, I think. Like you mentioned, Loxton can't rush the passer. Reader can't rush the passer. Dunn can't rush the passer. And then Scarlett can't rush the passer. Calvin Bye can't rush the passer. They have nobody else. It's just up to these 2 guys. And whatever Mercilus offers, just kind of wild card for that too. So the reports are that Clowney nicks the traits of the Dolphins. I don't know if that's true or not, because the Texans are in a weird situation where Clowney isn't signed to a contract at the moment. So if they trade him, he has to agree to his franchise tag, and then they can trade him. And if he does that, he's probably going to want to have a long-term deal in place wherever he ends up going this fall too. And so he does have all the leverage he can pick where he wants to go. The Texans can't just go out there and get the best offer for him. So, like, what do you think the Dolphins could offer for Clowney? And if the Texans are looking to trade him, what are they looking to try to receive this year for him?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not for a second buying that he nicks the trade to the Dolphins. Number one, I don't think he's got that leverage. Right? And number two,
he could not sign his franchise tender.
That's true. That's his leverage.
You're like, no, I'm not going to sign if you're going to trade in Miami.
But the thing is that he is from that part of the nation. He's part from that, you know, southeast part of the world. That's supposedly the Dolphins were his number one choice before he supposedly nicks that trade. So there's a lot of, like, conflicting information. I, for one, I'm just not buying it at all that he nicks that deal. What are we going to get for him? look, if we're trading him to the Dolphins, then Laremy Tunsil would have been somebody I would expect to come back. But then look what happens. Okay, so I say that. So let's say Laremy Tunsil and we get, I don't know, a third-round pick in that deal, right? Because we have Tunsil under contract for a couple of years, and Tunsil hasn't quite lived up to what he was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think this is Tunsil's fourth year also. So you're looking at paying Tunsil, you know, $15 million next year. And having to come up with a long-term contract after that too.
Yeah. So, but let's say Tunsil. So, but you just drafted your left tackle of the future in Titus Howard, and you just drafted your right tackle of the future in Max Sharping. So are you then, like, already giving, you know, throwing in the towel on Titus Howard? Are you already throwing in the towel and moving Sharping to guard, which is probably his best spot anyway at this point? So that, to me, has a lot of trickle-down effects of, you know, are we already giving up on Titus Howard as our left tackle of the future? So maybe you go out to Washington and you say, okay, send us Trent Williams. You know, that I don't know what good that does. That's a 1 or 2 year stopgap at left tackle. Once again, we take away snaps from Titus Howard learning that position. So where we really need to address the situation is cornerback. So the biggest, like the best looking trade that I could come up with was with the Ravens to send Clowney for a Jimmy Smith type deal. You know, I don't know if you go trade for a left tackle. I don't know. I'm not sure that addresses it, Matt. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't think you're going to get anything really at this point of the year as far as a player-to-player thing. I think you're looking to get, like, a first-round pick and maybe, like, a future, you know, second or third-round pick that is kind of dependent on where, you know, how many snaps maybe Clowney plays or how many, you know, sacks he has or some sort of set of time to it. But I don't know a player-for-player, you know, trade they're going to get for him. I mean, like, even the Trent Williams thing, like, he's a very good left tackle, but he's always hurt. He hasn't played 16 games, I think, in 3 years. He's 31 years old. And, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think this team, I think Clowney's too good. He's too important. He's what you can build this defense around. Who knows how many games Watts can play this year or even next year or the year after. Who knows how long his career is going to go. And Clowney's like a cornerstone that you can keep building your defense around for the next, you know, 3 to 4 years. And there's not like a – I've thought about potential trades and that sort of thing. But there's nothing out there that, you know, I'd love enough because it's like, yeah, let's say you have Jimmy Smith, Jonathan Joseph, you know, Aaron Colvin / Brandby Calhoun and Bradley Roby as your cornerback room. Like, that's still not good enough to make up for having a pass rush. And Watt then gets double, triple team. Then you hope Merciless is healthy and has, you know, 10 sacks and – it's just too many what ifs. So, I mean, there's not a trade out there that I really like for Clowney at all. But I'm expecting if they do it, it would be something like a left tackle and a second round pick or a first round pick. And even then, they don't even have a GM this year. So it's like, how are you going to scout for next year to even come up with a good selection in the first round? And it's funny too, because I know we joked about earlier this summer without a GM. It's like, yeah, just trade all of your picks for players because you can't even scout for the draft at all this year, anyways. With Bill O'Brien coaching the team and being the GM at the same time. And they kind of did that with the Duke Johnson trade in a way too. But yeah, there's not anything that really stands out. I think it would be extremely it's extremely stupid that didn't extend Clowney. Two, it's really dumb that he's playing, you have to play the franchise tag. And three, like them trading him, I think it's just also immensely like absurd and dumb as well too. And so let's say the Texans do trade Clowney. Let's say they get like Trent Williams for him. What do you think the Texans' record would be with Clowney and without Clowney?
I think that's a great question, is what is he going to bring? And I think that I don't think he's worth like a full win by himself, right? So I think maybe they're a 6-win team with him. They're a 5.5-win team without him. I think that's about the most value you can apply to him. But I think that if you're still not, what's the best way I can put this? There's going to be teams that we're going to match up well against. I think Oakland we match up well against. They're going to be able to throw the ball against us to a certain degree. But we're not playing the Bills this year. We're not playing those sorts of teams that have to run the ball to be successful. So what it tells me is that you're not going to be in game. So when we play the Saints, we're not going to be pressuring Drew Brees. They're going to drop 50 on us without Clowney, but they only drop 40 on us with Clowney. So that's the sort of thing I'm looking at, is that he's going to make more of a difference on a game-to-game level, but I don't think he makes a difference as far as the number of wins. I just think that we're not competitive without him against certain teams, the Falcons, the Saints, the Patriots, and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I think this is, that's the biggest thing for me, though, is that like, the only run-heavy teams that they play this year are Jacksonville and Tennessee, and then everybody else is are competent in passing offenses. And I think, you know, saying the Raiders are competent passing offenses, maybe a stretch, but who knows, you know, what happens this year with them, with the wide receivers they added. And their offensive line should be better this year as well, too. But it's like you take you know, 11 other games over the course of all those 11 games where you need a pass rush, and whenever their pass rush with and without Clowney, like I think they'd probably be, you know, 25th in pressure rate without Clowney, whereas they'd be 15th in pressure rate with them. And so I think over the course of 15 games and the amount of passing offenses they play, like I think, like I would probably say with Clowney, I would say the Houston's probably about an 8-win team, and that's making the assumption that Watson's going to play at top 10 quarterback level and they're going to be able to score points and stay in these games. And hopefully they win enough close games whenever these shootouts they have to play. But without Clowney, I'd say this is probably a 6-win team because they're not going to have the pass rush over the course of those 11 games. They're going to miss out. I think it's a huge difference between the two with them without Clowney. And, like, if they trade him, like, I'm just completely done and give it up on this year. And I'll just have to – I don't know. I'll move to Tampa Bay and get a Hawaiian shirt and enjoy watching Jameis Winston attempt, like, every pass for at least 13 yards a game.
So just looking at the numbers, like, so we had 43 sacks last year. Matthew had 3 of those. If we traded Clowney, that'd be another 9. Christian Covington had 3.5. Ejiofor had 1. So we'd be coming – we'd have – from the 43 sacks, we'd only have like about 28 back on the team this year, which seems like if you take Clowney out of the equation and whom else we've taken out of the equation, that seems about right. 28 sacks for an NFL team in this NFL in this day and age would be terribly poor.
Yeah, and I mean like Clowney and Wyatt account for – I think close to 60% of all sacks, quarterback hits, and pressures. And now you're taking away half of that, and now your pass rushes, I don't know, drop by, I guess, 30%. I don't know how the numbers work out there. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just – it's completely impotent, you know. And then what you're going to expect Jonathan Joseph to, you know, run downfield with even, you know, Paris Campbell. I don't even see that even happening. So, yeah, I think it would be an absolute disaster for the season if they trade him. And I don't think a first-round pick is worth it. I think Trent Williams is worth it. I think 100% for this year, and even just trying to maximize Deshaun Watson's rookie contract for this year, next year, you need to have fun on this team as well too. I think part of the reason why this whole Clowney trade came up was that, or the rumors have gone from percolating to boiling, is because this offensive line is really bad, and I think this offensive line is going to be worse this year than it was last year, which is kind of insane to say. Because we're talking about an offensive line that finished, you know, 32nd in pressure rate, 32nd in adjusted sack rate, and a team that gave up 62 sacks last year. And that's also, you know, part of that's on Deshaun Watson. You know, Watson, I think, was 3rd in the league with for, you know, time he held the ball before he threw it at 3.02 seconds. You know, also Davenport at right tackle and Rankin at left tackle was a disaster to account for a lot of the sacks. The inability to block at the tight end position account for a lot of the sacks too. But I mean, it was an awful pass protection last year. And this year, it could even be worse. In the first preseason game, they tried out Matt Khalil, left tackle, Tyus Howard, left guard, Greg Minks at center, Zach Fulton, right guard, and Sancho Henderson as right tackle as their offensive line. And do you think this offensive line could actually be worse than last year, like I just alluded to?
I don't have any doubt in my mind it's going to be worse at this point. I mean, the fact that we are putting such – Bill O'Brien, I'm not saying we on this one, Bill O'Brien is stressing so much versatility. So I guess he wants these guys to suck at every position along the line of scrimmage rather than just one. And that makes no sense. I don't get this strategy at all. It's great. You have a guy who plays left tackle. You have a guy that plays right tackle. Let's call them maybe Dwayne Brown and Eric Winston, and you let them sit there for 10 years at their positions and do really well and learn the positions inside and out. And then you have like a Chris Clark who can play both, right? So, you know, you're going to – it's a downgrade no matter what, but at least you let these two guys learn to play the positions.
Yeah.
Bill O'Brien is refusing to do that. So now we're left with this cluster kitten at along the offensive line. Is this going to be worse? Look, that offensive line that ended the year last year wasn't half bad. Once we got past the Martinez Rankin at left tackle and the Julian Davenport at right tackle experiment, Davenport's numbers on the second, well, for the rest of the season, weren't that disgusting. They were when he was at right tackle. So if you know, that's why I was kind of like, Julian Davenport really is the best left tackle on the team today, right now, still, as depressing as that might be. So what are you going to do with him now? And he barely played in the first preseason game. So you got your best left tackle on the roster. He's not playing. So that means that even your left tackle is going to be a downgrade from the end of last year, Matt. So I don't see how they're actually better in 2019.
Yeah. No, I mean, I said Khalil is going to start left tackle week one because they gave him $7.5 million for him not to. And even that Packers preseason game, I mean, his punch is just, and his hands are so, atrocious. Like whenever he punches, he doesn't stop anybody and he gets turned back around the quarterback and he holds every play because of it. Watching Tyus Howard, the biggest problem I saw with Howard was just his hands are awful. He wasn't able to strike the chest and hold it all. And whenever your center moves off to help on the right side of the line of scrimmage, he loses the block because his hands aren't there, controlling. He's not overtaking blocks. And the same thing at the second level, he was falling off the blocks too much. And his hands were just really bad. The one thing I did like about the preseason game was I really liked Fulton at center. Hopefully, whenever Nick Marr gets back, I hope we just move center. I hope Fulton just starts at center. I think he's better at than Martin. I think they'd be better off with Martin being benched. Like, and Henderson's the same problems as Khalil, where Henderson is like 6'7", 340 pounds. But again, he has no upper body strength. He doesn't snuff out pass rush at all with his punch because he has such a weak punch. I thought Sharp moving to guard makes sense because, like I said, for, I guess the last 4 months or so, he doesn't have an NFL caliber pass set. And I don't care that he gave up one pressure at, the University of Miami, Ohio, with the mobile quarterback and that strange sort of offense. He doesn't have an NFL-level pass set. And, even like he was – I didn't see much like vertical movement from him. I didn't see much drive from him. I thought it was whatever from him at right guard. But, like, I just don't know what they're doing with the offensive line. And the other weird thing about it, too, was that they didn't play Rankin. They didn't play Davenport really at all. I know Davenport didn't come in, like you mentioned, and they put Rankin as the right guard against the third string. And I know, like, I understand – like, I don't know if it's necessarily like favoritism or how they play in training camp, that sort of thing. But it's just so weird to me that you're playing, like, your UDFA guys on the second team instead of these two guys who have starred before and have talent and have played, somewhat good enough before. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Davenport's probably the best left tackle. I don't think he's going to play at all. And going back to versatility, too, like Howard playing left guard just makes sense for this year. Sharpton playing right guard makes sense for this year. But that was the first thing Bill O'Brien says. Like, I love versatility. We stress versatility. You stress versatility for your backup offensive lineman. Like you mentioned with Chris Clark or your left guard or like Manx, That's where you want your versatility. You don't want your versatility with your starting offensive line. And I think they've already screwed the development in a lot of ways. They've already kind of screwed up this offensive line. And I do think it's going to be worse than it was last year. Even worse than the offensive line that was last in the league in sacks allowed and pressure rate.
So let's move on. We were pretty much in agreement. So in my perfect world, heading into the season, my offensive line would be, oh my gosh, is this really that difficult of a question? Mine would be that. Oh my gosh, Davenport, Fulton, Manx, Rankin, Sharping, Rankin.
Yeah, it sounds better than Khalil Howard, Martin, Fulton, Henderson for sure. And the other thing too about it's like whenever week one happens, if they come in with this offensive line, I'd give it a half. It's going to last. Like I think Cameron Jordan would have 3 sacks against Khalil in the first half.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're scrambling around immediately. I think probably try Howard at left tackle after him playing left guard all preseason. The whole thing drives me crazy. I saw some tweet by Patrick Starr that was like, Rankin, Davenport game working one-on-one drills look great. I said, great, good. I want to hear more of that. I just want them to have a shot. And it seems like Bill O'Brien has this weird doghouse where he has this favoritism where it's like, I don't know what it is, but it seems like it's so easy to get buried in the depth chart for no reason. And I think a lot of that is what's happened to the offensive line as well, too. But I mean, I hate it. I really hated watching that first preseason game and just watching how bad this offensive line was.
Yeah, my best hope for this offensive line is that Khalil embarrasses himself so badly in the preseason that we just have no choice but to cut him, because he looks so bad. And you know what? It's exactly how he's looked the last 3 years when he's actually played. He has been the worst left tackle in football for 3 solid years now.
And I think he even go back. Like, he hasn't been good since his rookie year, and that was, I think, 2013, 2014, whenever he played for the Vikings. And, like, he hasn't been good since then, and he almost murdered Cam Newton plenty of times whenever he was out there too. And just, like, he just has no punch at all. The other good thing I can say about the offensive line is try to be a little more positive. I thought Robert Johnson played pretty well at left tackle. I think he played better than Khalil did. I think he played better than Sancho Henderson did. I know he was like a backup on the practice squad last year, but I was okay with his performance. But that's, you know, I'm doing my best here. I'm doing my best. Yeah, Robert Johnson played okay last Thursday.
But we're just grasping for straws. We just need straws in front of us to grasp at, so we can be doing it literally.
Yeah. So what were some other things that he picked up on this first preseason game against the Green Bay Packers?
Well, that Joe Webb is a gutsy dude. I really picked that up. Dude was running for his life from the first snap, like literally the first snap. And wasn't there a hold on the first play of the game?
I know Khalil got a holding call pretty early in then,
which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really felt for Joe Webb. He did what he could out there. And it's terrifying to think that they were facing like the Packers, you know, a couple of Packers starters, and they're not a great team at getting to the quarterback. What's going to happen? Again, you bring up Cameron Jordan. What happens when we play Cameron Jordan? I mean, he's going to destroy whomever he faces. My goodness. So good for Joe Webb.
Yeah. No, I would kind of rather see Joe Webb as the backup quarterback than McCarron, because at least, like, there is that mobility and movement and can deal with some of the stuff that he had to deal with. Like, McCarron would have died. Like, his guts would have been hanging out of his torso, you know, if he was out there. I do think, going back to the Packers, though, like, they put their backups. Like, I didn't see the Smiths out there. I didn't see Kenny Clark out there. I do think the Packers have at least a top 10 pass rush this season with Gary, with, you know, Zadarius Smith, Preston Smith. With Blake Martinez's ability to blitz from the inside, with Kenny Clark's ability as an interior rusher, they were 12th in sack rate last year. And that's without, you know, this big inclusion of talent they had this season.
Oh, that's right.
So I am excited to watch Green Bay's pass rush this year. The other thing except for the offensive line that I really picked up on was how bad the pass rush was against Green Bay from Houston's perspective. So Watts on the field, Clan's on the field. Mercer was out there. He tried to do some spin moves against the Packers left. You back up with tackle. Didn't work out very well. As a team, they had zero sacks, zero four back hits, zero pressures. I mean, not zero pressures. Zero sacks, zero four back hits, zero tackles for a loss. I think the only pressure I saw was on the Benarcha McKinney blitz, where Deshaun Kizer was able to hit the post crawl anyways in his face. And so this is the pass rush that we're talking about, where going back to the offseason, they need to add additional interior rusher. They need to add, you know, pass rushing help, because it's just Watt and Clowney, and that's it. And so whenever you take Watt and Clowney off the field, this is what you get. You get goose eggs across the board. And I think it just goes back to for the point that the Houston Texans really need Jadeveon Clowney. Like, they can't – like, I can't stress this enough. This is going to be one of the worst pass rushes in football if Clowney is not on the field this season for them.
And they're going to be bad even if he is on the field. I mean, they're not going to be – you're going to have two guys doing all the heavy lifting.
It'll be mediocre at least. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So at least there's some threat that the quarterback might actually, you know, go down.
And they also make a lot of really impact plays too. They force fumbles, they recover fumbles. And, you know, you think back to that Colts game last year, the Eagles game last year, where Clowney had a touchdown, Clowney strip sack, Nick Foles, he stopped that two-point conversion by ripping his head off. Why with the strip sack, they create a touchdown as well too in those games. Like, it's more than just like pressures and hits. It's the fumbles that they create and the bad passes and sort of thing, the turnovers too.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I cannot imagine watching this team without Clowney.
Yeah. And also, like, aesthetically, like, I just love watching Clowney play. Like, I've never seen somebody, he's a barbarian out there. Like, he has, like, a skull, you know, like, his entire shoulder pads are made out of skulls, you know? And he has a, an ear. And he has a necklace made out of ears, and like in one hand he has a scalp of his enemy. You know, like he's just such a murderous guy. And I'm just like, as a fan perspective, like I've just missed watching him play. He's not out there.
Yeah, I think my favorite play, and this is so stupid, it's like celebrating after giving up a 15-yard rush, right? Is when he makes a play from behind on a guy that, you know, he's down the field 15, 20 yards and tackling a guy. Because you just don't expect that. You don't expect that kind of speed and that kind of ability to recover. I love it. It's just so menacing. Yeah.
But he doesn't play hard, though.
He doesn't play hard.
Yeah, he doesn't bring it every play, which is so stupid. The other two things I saw from his first preseason game is the run defense is good. There's no arguing against that. It should still be, even without Clowney, it's going to be a top 10 run defense. With Clowney, you're looking at, you know, the best run defense in football. And it's also funny, too, like Football Outsiders, their projections for this year, they have the Texans as having the best defense in football this season, and that includes J. Van Clowney. I wonder how much that would drop without him. But also, Deshaun Kizer, he looked really good, and hopefully we get to see him start one day, because I know we both really enjoyed him whenever he came out of college, especially his ability to throw the deep ball downfield. Like, one of my favorite throws of all time was that touchdown through to Will Fuller against Virginia when they were upset, where he was just like 75 yards in the air, hitting Fuller Ryan stride. So hopefully we get to see Kai Teddy Bridgewater. Hopefully we get to see him start again today.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd like to see him play. He's a fun guy to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy watching him. So you have anything else from his first preseason game you want to bring up?
The only thing that I wanted to bring up was the one guy who I enjoyed the most watching during the game, and he only had two catches, but there's something about Tyron Johnson that kind of physically arouses me, and I'd like to see a lot more of him. I think this is a guy, he's got elite speed. He looks like he can run routes just fine. He's a little dude. I look at him and I'm going, man, I want to stick him in the slot. He's 6'1", so he's not that little. But there's something about him that just really excited me.
Yeah. So you would rather have him be like the fifth wide receiver instead of Vincent Smith?
As of right now, I like the rapport that Vincent Smith supposedly has with Deshaun Watson. But I don't know, man. Watching Tyron Johnson play was really cool. I like Vincent Smith a lot. You know, I can't deny that. But
I just like how he's from like an imaginary college. Like he's not from Limestone University. He's from Limestone State University.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, they also I want to add off from the first preseason game. But already this Saturday, they have joint practices against the Lions today, and then they will have that game tomorrow. And Saturday at 7 o'clock, they play the Lions. What are you looking forward to in this game as both Bill O'Brien and Matt Patricia try to outbuild Belichick one another?
Oh, my gosh. That's just a great way to put it. It's the preseason. I don't really look for anything, is the honest truth. I just, you know, looking for – watching the guys play. We're not going to see any scheme gives. We're not going to see a lot of things. You know, the biggest thing is, what's the offensive line going to look like? I haven't seen – maybe there's been – I haven't seen an update on Mangs. I don't know what his situation is heading into this week. So – and how bad his injury is. So what's that going to do? Because he's – you know, once again, he's probably the best. Fulton's probably technically the best center on the team, but I like Manx a lot at center, and I like them both a lot more than Martin at center. So I would like to have Manx, because this guy is a more than solid backup. I mean, he is a very average guy, and on this offensive line, that's pretty elite.
That's a good sentence. I like that sentence. Yeah, I mean, really, I'm just gonna be watching the offensive line again. Like, really, I just want to see Davenport get some snaps to left tackle again. I want to see Martinez Rankin get some snaps as, like, the number two guard, even playing right tackle, that sort of thing. Because, it's insane having an offensive line this bad and have all these UDFAs, you know, playing the majority of snaps in the second half. Like, that Shazier guy and whatever, it just doesn't make much sense to me at all. And hopefully, like, Howard's hands are better. Hopefully, you know, Sharpie shows more movement at the first level. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not expecting for much here. But mainly I'll be watching the offensive line. Because it depends if the Lions play their stars or not. But the Lions should have a really good run defense this year with Mike Daniels, with Hand, with Robinson, and then also with Jonathan Hankins as well too. Like, they should have like a really great run defense this year. And so watching them against that front would be fun as well too.
Yeah, and not so much of a pass rush.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to get to the quarterback this year at all.
If there's a defense that's like ours, it's theirs. They've got better cornerbacks, but they've got nobody to get the quarterback dirty.
Yeah, all their pass rush just comes from the linebackers blitzing. That's how they set their rush. But yeah, and so maybe, and also Duke Johnson's not going to play on Saturday. You probably won't expect Kiki Cutie until maybe week four. So they said it was not a serious injury after he hurt his foot in that Packers game. And hopefully Deshaun Watson plays too. Like hopefully we get to see at least two series from him and see some deep field passes at least. And also I would like to see somebody, just like anybody, just like hit the quarterback one time. Like just once. Because like the Lions don't have that. The Lions have invested a bunch in their offensive line, but it's super mediocre. And so hopefully somebody can just at least smell the quarterback.
God, that's pathetic. That's how low the bar is.
Oh, it's as low as it can be so far. So the last thing we have for tonight, aside from the one listener question that we have, is that there's some big AFC South news that Andrew Luck has missed training camp because of a calf injury, and then they've isolated the injury as an ankle injury, and they're going to be working diligently to try and get him healthy and pain-free for the upcoming season. So the Colts' schedule to start the year is it's at the Chargers, at Tennessee, Atlanta, Oakland, and at Kansas City. And so, BFD, do you think an injury to Luck opens the door for the Texans, the Colts, or the Jaguars to win this division if he does miss an extended amount of time?
Well, the problem is that we're not playing him during that time. So I don't really think it opens the door for us. I think it does for Tennessee just merely because they get to play him. They get to play Brisket. I'm not calling him by his real name. He's Jacoby Brisket. I don't care. We don't get to play him during that time. So, when you look at their schedule, the Chargers game looks a lot more difficult. The BESF game looks more difficult. Atlanta was always going to be tough. I'm pretty sure that my old intramural football team, and even though we're all in our late 40s or early 50s at this point, could beat Oakland. And then KC is going to be a tough one anyway. So, it's the Colts, I think, still are in the driver's seat for the division, but that's if Luck can come back. I don't think they can lose them for much more than this 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it really opens the doors for, I would say, Jacksonville, just because the Titans are mediocre at everything. They're not good at anything. They may be good at – they may have a great run offense this year, maybe, but they're not – they're just pretty average at everything. And the Jaguars, I'm expecting for that defense to be a top 10 defense team this year. The entire offense is going to be healthy again. And the difference from Bortles to Foles, even if I don't think Foles is – I think Foles is very average. But even then, like the difference between Bortles and Foles, I think it's like a 40% difference.
Oh, yeah.
Foles last year this year. And so the Colts do start off 1-4 because Luck is hurt. That, I think, opens the door for the Jaguars, especially probably in this division. And, Houston during that same time period, where they play – at the Saints on Monday night, and they play the Jacksonville the Jaguars and the Chargers. And I keep doing it. They play Jacksonville, and they play Los Angeles, the Chargers, and they play Carolina, Atlanta, Kansas City, and they don't play Indy until Week 7. And like, their first like 8 games are their entire schedule is super tough except for the Tampa game and the Oakland game. And the rest of the time, you're expecting Houston to probably not be favored in those games, except for probably against Tennessee as well, too. So I don't think Houston really has the opportunity to pounce on Indy's schedule, but I think it'll still look for probably Jacksonville, though.
Yeah, I like the point that you're making with that. I just, when I look at the schedule, especially those first few games, these are really tough matchups. Look, Nick Foles beat us last year. You only have to be Nick Foles good to beat this defense. And that's a big problem for the Texans this year is we're playing a lot of guys who are better than Nick Foles.
Yeah, and Foles had an awesome game. He threw like 350 yards that game. And the only pass rush that Houston had in that game wasn't from Watt at all. Watt was held down the entire game. It was all from Clowney. Clowney was the one who was like the one record they had on defense. And even then, they still scored 31 points.
Right.
And Clowney even forced a fumble in the red zone that game. It led to an easy Houston touchdown that Watson scrambled on. And so, I don't know. It just sucks. And it goes back to what we talked about in this offseason, that they have all this draft capital, they have all these resources, And they have a super tough schedule next year. And like, they have to have a great offseason, because if they don't, they're going to regress, especially the schedule they're going into. And I don't think you can make the argument the team got better because of how bad the offensive line is. And the secondary got better. And the defense got a little bit better. But it doesn't. Clowney's not available. And I think it was, like you mentioned earlier, I can't think of a worst offseason, except for maybe the 16 Texans who signed name redacted and then chose Jeff Allen over Brandon Brooks and signed Lamar Miller to a big contract. But that was like three bad decisions instead of, you know, 15, 20 bad decisions we've seen this year. And it's also amazing how bad that Dwayne Brown tried to set this team back to, you know, for a second round pick and a third round pick. And Brown's still starting in Seattle. He's still really great. And the Texans still have found an option to left tackle 3 years later. And it's we thought it was a dumb trade at the time, and it's amazing how much of a disaster that trade was.
And I'm still amazed that there was such a large number of people who said we needed to make that trade and get rid of Dwayne Brown. I just don't, you know, left tackles are really important in football.
Well, I think the argument is that they didn't want to extend him, pay him guaranteed money because he was 32 years old. But you can play tackle for a long time. And it was an awful trade. It was a terrible decision, and that was a Rick Smith decision. It wasn't even a Brian Gain decision as well either. But it really is amazing the ripple effects that trade has had to this roster.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I think we could do like an entire podcast on the Jay Brown trade revision, or at least rally against our article, because I mean Brown was good last year. He's been good in Seattle.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So the two questions that we have for this podcast. One was from Upper Root Texan. He said, "You sure you have to talk about the Houston Texans?" And yeah, I'm sure. We just did it. The second question was from CMS454. And he said, "Matt, what do you think Matt Kulo's PFF rate will be at the end of the season?" And I think he's going to play like a half of the first game, and it's going to be like a 40.4 or maybe like a 38.7. Like something was like, it's going to be below 45, I'm guessing. And but like, I bet like he grades out well in the run game, though, than they like some meaningless plays like away from him where he just seals the backside defensive end where he gets like a plus two. Like, I think he gets enough of those that it bumps him up a little bit. But yeah, I'm expecting something in the 40s, though.
Like what is the bare minimum when you take the SAT? Like you just write your name and you get like 200 points on the SAT.
Yeah, right? Something like that.
So what if you just write your name down for the PFF, you know, PFF score? What is that? Is that like a 10?
I don't know. Let me email that guy who tried to defend their stats on the internet the other day. Like, hey, what's the minimum I get for just suiting up and staying on the last scrimmage?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. That was such a troll of a question. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, none of it means. I'm so also like, I just hate the preseason stuff. Like, all like the training camp gifts and like clips. Like, there was so much analysis about that Tyus Howard pass block where the guy spins, he falls, starts, he spins, he grabs him, he throws him down. They call that as a holding penalty often enough. But that, and then also just the training, the preseason analysis. Like, I can't think of any – I talked about this with Chris whenever we did the previous show. Like, I can't think of anything that happened in the preseason that had any reality in the regular season. It's like, oh, wow. Except for Tom Savage being terrible. Like, we knew Tom Savage was terrible because we saw it the year before that. And that's really the only thing I can think of. You know, it's a lot of the stuff is just a bunch of noise, and it's what we do because we miss football. But most of it doesn't really mean anything at all.
Yeah, I just love that one clip. Like, we're gonna base Tyus Howard Hall of Fame, you know, based upon one clip of that with the hold, and I was just like, oh my gosh, is that really? That's like film study as being 3 seconds of a Twitter post. That's film study.
Yeah, no, the best is also it's from like a CBS news anchor. It's like Tyus out here is out here mauling people. It's like, sure, dude. Sure. but nobody writes anymore. It's all just Twitter gifs, and nobody writes anything at all anymore. Everything's just something you can scroll through your phone for 3 seconds at a time. As we hit the fast forward button in our lives. So, but that's all I have for tonight. I don't know if you have anything else, Phil.
No, I'm just – this is the sixth year for Bill O'Brien being the head coach of your Houston Texans.
It's crazy.
I can see it now. This team's going to go 5-11. And everybody's going to write it off and say, hey, it's because Bill O'Brien didn't have a GM. And so we're going to head into a seventh season with Bill O'Brien as your head coach. And the team is not going to go anywhere as long as he's here.
Yeah, I don't, you bring that up. Like we talked about whenever Game was fired. My conspiracy theory was that he went to the owner, he had him fired to use as a game as a scapegoat because he saw this roster, he saw the schedule. It's like, oh, this is going to be a 6-win season probably. I need to jump ahead of the curve to keep my job. And I don't – like, even if Houston won 5 games next year, I still think they would fire him. Like, I don't even know what it would take for Bill O'Brien to get fired next year.
Yeah, because he still gets all the credibility for the 11-5 season last year. It's like
– yeah.
We went 11-5 because we played a bunch of teams who didn't know how to throw the football. Because
the schedule changed. Yeah. Well, and also the schedule went from 31st toughest to the second toughest this year projected. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like the one thing I could think of is if he, like, they're 3-12 and they lose week 17, they're 3-13, and he goes to the podium and he says a bunch of racist slurs and then calls, you know, a female reporter, you know, by some bad name or something. Even then, I don't think he'd even lose his job. He'd still find a way to stick around. I don't know. There's nothing.
Especially if the old man was still around.
Yeah, I don't know. Cal played football at UT. He's a little bit more progressive, I guess. But I don't know what it would take for Bill O'Brien to get fired after the season.
I don't think he is. We're going to be talking about him 3 years from now, heading into his 10th season as a head coach, and we still have one playoff win under our belts.
Yeah, it's a nice feature to look forward to.
Yeah.
But anyways, thank you for being on tonight, BFT. We'll have to do another show like this next week after the Texans play the Lions. And then maybe, I don't know. I just don't like preseason football at all.
Preseason sucks.
Yeah, and then tomorrow, if you're listening to this, we'll have our NFC South preview go up. And then Monday, I'm doing a Tennessee Titans preview. So we'll preview every division, every team entering the season, all those podcasts, and then do these separate Texans episodes until the season starts in about 3 weeks here. So anyways.
Sounds great.
Thank you for being on tonight, BFT. My name is Matt Weston. Thank you for listening.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.